In this episode, Hunter Isaacson, the guy who's gotten 300 million plus downloads to his consumer apps, shares his playbook for how to go $0 to $1 million MRR in a consumer app. How do you create mobile apps like him? He's created an app called NGL, which got 250 million downloads. He created other apps that got 60 million downloads, a dating app, crypto app. So he just breaks it down. It's really, really simple how he breaks it down. Obviously, creating a business isn't simple, and I'll never, ever tell you that it isn't simple. I learned a little bit from it, and I think you will too. I do believe that right now there's a window with consumer AI and consumer mobile apps that you can actually go and build a startup and start generating real revenue without raising venture capital. So I'm particularly interested right now in the consumer mobile app space. Hunter Isaacson is a great guy to learn from. Enjoy this episode and let me know what you think in the comments. We got Hunter Isaacson on the pod. You might not recognize him, but I'm pretty sure you recognize some of his apps. This is the GOAT who's gotten 250 million downloads for NGL. Is that right?
That's right, yes.
And then another 70 million downloads for the new app you're working on?
Previous apps I built.
Previous apps you've built. And so this guy's got the sauce. And we have a thing on the Startup Ideas podcast, which is, When someone has a sauce, you have to deal the sauce. So what I'm hoping for is, I'm going to share my screen real quick. I saw this tweet where it's a bunch of these apps, mobile apps, 100K MRR, 300K MRR, Kalea, Million AR, Riz, 200 MRR, Couple Joy, 300K MRR, basically a bunch of apps that are doing anywhere between 100,000 MRR, or actually 90,000 MRR and a million MRR, and how they've been able to grow organically through product-led growth and stuff like that. And my goal today, Hunter, if you oblige to deal some sauce, is to help us understand how people are doing this in consumer social and crypto and AI. And you know, by the end of this episode, I want people to basically have ideas for how they can go and do this themselves. Do you think we can do this?
I think we can definitely do this. Absolutely, brother. We can.
Okay. Well, where do you want to start?
I mean, we can kind of start with just the obvious picks on that list. Cal AI is a great example of how to use, you know, classic tools and AI and that are publicly available to everybody. But then if you package it nicely, if you create a good onboarding experience, you create like a user investment in that onboarding experience. If you kind of package these simple tools the way that they did, that's why they've seen the success that they've had, right? You know, the reality is anyone can go and make a calorie tracking app, but they built an amazing funnel, right? So I think like the key lesson in a Cal AI is they packaged it really, really nicely and made it seem even more valuable than it is, which I think is, you know, part of the genius of an app that simple.
So what you're saying is basically, it's really simple. Like it's stupid simple. That's how good it is.
Yeah.
And they just figured out basically how to onboard, you know, I think it's been largely known, creators onto, you know, to create content around it. And then you marry creators with a stupid simple app mixed with AI and good things happen.
Absolutely.
Cool. Let's move on. Like, what about, do you know anything about some of these lesser known apps like Bible Chat? Like, I've never even heard of that.
So I've seen Halo. I know Coconut. Okay. I don't think I've seen Bible Chat. Obviously, I know Pengu, you know, Couple Joy, Riz, Locket, obviously, all those guys.
Let's look at Halo for a second. Because I didn't realize it, but it's the number one app for Christian and Catholic prayers. What do you know about this app?
I know that it has some pretty big backers. I know that it's very built out. I mean, it's definitely super popular. I think that as young people kind of grow up and, you know, venture into religion, there need to be mobile apps, you know, for religion and for, you know, seeing these stories and kind of experiencing them in a different way. So I think that they took just like, yeah, they took the Bible, they made it mobile, they made it digital, they made it more colorful, adding push notifications, just kind of like making it young and making it appeal to not just, you know, older audiences, but also skewing towards, you know, millennials, Gen Z.
And they charge $69.99 for a yearly plan. They charge $120 for a friends and family plan, which includes up to six members. That's actually kind of cool.
That is a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that's a, when it comes to like health, spirituality, stuff like that, including a friends and family plan, makes sense.
100%. Yeah, I fully agree with that.
Do you think that there's opportunities, you know, in the, like, okay, Halo's crushing it. I think Pray.com is also crushing it. There's a, you know, is there more opportunity to create spiritual apps for example, Christians?
I think there's, I mean, across all religions, yeah, there's a huge opening for this. You know, I was raised Jewish. I'm not very, I don't go to synagogue as often as I used to. There's other religions that I've been interested in, you know, different, you know, more spiritual, you know, or Buddhist, you know, Buddhism, things of that nature. I don't see apps for those types of religions, right? So I think there is an opportunity here to kind of look at what are the denominations and faith that people have around the world and like how many of those have been turned into an app. And are you passionate enough about the subject matter to go and build the app for those people, right? I feel like that's the question on the builder side.
I'm laughing because it's two Jews talking about if there's an opportunity to build something for Christians.
It is kind of funny.
We're going to get so roasted in the comment section. It's going to be insane.
At least we can recognize it, though. We're calling ourselves.
Totally. Dude, 4.9 on 284,000 ratings.
That's wild.
Seeing this? Yeah. I'll just say one thing on this before we move on from spiritual apps is I think what they did really well here is it looks like they have a really good like daily use case. So like daily prayers are in there. And it's just like a really good single player experience, meaning like you could, there's, it just seems like there's a ton of content. Like they got a bunch of content and they structure it in a way that you're going to open this up daily. Which is kind of like what you want, right? Because they have the daily prayers, they have sleep meditations, they've got minute meditations, and then they've got like kind of a multiplayer experience around community challenges. So I think that if you're creating a spiritual app, think about it as like single player first. How do I create the best daily driver single player? And then how do I add multiplayer? How would you think about it?
I mean, I think that in an app like this is very much single player first. I think you look at the multiplayer side as like a way to leverage like a different growth lever, right? So if you have, you know, you have a really good single player app, it's easy to then add like some kind of multiplayer experience or some kind of social experience where you're porting in contacts or you're connecting socials or they're sharing something to socials. I feel like all that is like great growth levers. Once you have an amazing single player experience, once you have some kind of habit that you've formed, then, you know, you can add a little gate, right? You can, you know, you can gate monetization with some kind of share mechanism. You can, you know, encourage them to invite their friends and family for a discount. A lot of things that you can do in that realm, but you do need to crush that core experience before you can do this.
Okay, I have a question for you. So we talked about Cal AI in the beginning. They took something that pretty much existed before, calorie tracking, and then they made it AI first. Is there like an AI first version of Halo that could be created?
I mean, yeah, there totally could be. I think that, you know, more with GPT vision, I think will be interesting, right? Being able to look at things, to take pictures of, you know, beautiful scenery, and then it overlays and creates some kind of beautiful, you know, religious or spiritual video, maybe with some kind of Bible quote, you know, things of that nature, right? Content creation here could be interesting. For AI, you know, generating answers to, complex questions using, different religious texts. I feel like there's a lot that you could do here. It just, we're still pretty early.
Yeah. Cool. So someone could be experimenting. Okay. Moving on from two Jews in a Christian app. Okay. Lockit. Let's talk about Lockit. So, I've used Lockit actually with my wife. Yeah. Like as a consumer. Tell people what it is, why it's interesting, and how they've been able to grow.
Well, I've been using Lockit for a long time. The founder is a very, very smart guy. And the general premise is they were the first ones to really take the widget functionality on the iPhone and make it social by just taking a picture and it goes to your friend's home screen. It's a very simple concept. And I feel like it really popped off with, kind of like people on TikTok who are in relationships, like the relationship talk side of TikTok or the, best friend side of TikTok. There's, skewing super young, right? Like kind of how do you build a social app that's, Snapchat-esque, but it lives in a different place. I feel like Lockit was like amazing at figuring out how to do that. I've used the app. It's a great app. Absolutely.
So it does feel like, it's one of those apps that saw that like widgets started to become more like was a thing, right? They saw an opportunity. To me, it was like the first widget that I was using as a daily basis.
Yeah.
We're sitting now in 2025. Like what is the equivalent of, I think this, they built this probably in 2022.
Around there.
What is the equivalent of, the widget store just opened in 2025? Like, from an Apple perspective, does this exist? Like where is the Wild West in terms of, new opportunities within the Apple ecosystem?
I think that every year we have a new version of iOS and there's sometimes they give us something new, like new real estate to play with. I really think live activities is a cool thing that very few people are playing with compared to what they should be, which is when like on your lock screen, it like shows some kind of cool graphic, like your Uber is on the way, right? And it's like, it shows, the distance, things of that nature. I feel like live activities is like, that's a super interesting piece that no one is really dominated, like the way Lockit dominated the widget functionality. I also think like lock screen widgets have not been fully played out. Like, I use them a lot, to kind of customize my lock screen. I wish there were more. I'm sure there's like some social experiences that we could use there. But every year there's something new that Apple gives us. Yeah, exactly. Things like this.
Yeah, it's true. Like, the lock screen widget, you stare at it every day, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing with this sort of stuff, when Apple opens up something new is like Lockit looks obvious now, but realistically, like they were one of the first, if not the first mainstream use cases of a widget.
Yeah.
So I can, my prediction over the next 6 to 12 months, live activities and iPhone lock screen widgets, like we're going to see one or two really big, bangers basically.
Yeah. I could see it happening for sure.
By the way, you've grown your apps to millions of users. Like Guillaume, this guy on X who's really good at sort of sharing a lot of these examples. He's like exclusively talks about like creators, driving the growth of them, the organic content. Like, is this something that everyone needs to pay attention to? How have you grown your apps? Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the way that I've really grown my apps is using creators and using TikTok and that kind of content just to seed the app. To get enough people to download it within a tight amount of time in order for them to then kind of activate a growth loop where everybody shares something. This is what I did on MGL. We spent less than $10,000 marketing the entire product to get the 250 million downloads that we got. And really the purpose of the marketing was just to seed it, right? Just to get enough people to download it quickly. Because it's one of those apps that just once enough people do it, it just goes giga viral, which is what happened for us. It just took some time to seed it properly. And we used TikTok and Instagram to do it.
And what do you say to people who say, I've seen this app before, this isn't a new idea?
Yeah, it's not a new idea, right? You know, anonymous messaging apps have been on the internet for a long time. You know, there was AskFM, there was Yik Yak, there was a bunch of different ones, you know, in between. Really what made NGL special for us is we launched it right when Instagram, you know, unveiled the link feature for everybody. Used to have 10,000 followers to post links. In October of 2021, they just randomly switched it. Within a few days, me and some friends were already building NGL. We shipped it in a few weeks. And then it took about 6 months after that point for people to start using it, just because it took time to seed it.
So for like people listening, you don't really need to reinvent the wheel, sounds like.
No, it's a new channel, right? You know, it's like if anonymous messaging has worked on the internet, it's worked on apps, it's worked on different platforms, why wouldn't it work with Instagram as the growth lever? So that was kind of our thought process behind building the app. It also, because like nobody had ever posted, you know, links on Instagram. The average person had never done it. So we really had to train, you know, a couple hundred million people on how to, you know, tap the link sticker, paste the link, position the link. Sounds really easy, but it's super, super hard at scale to getting everybody to fully comprehend like a new feature that they hadn't used prior.
Totally. Yeah, I think it gets you thinking that you can kind of like go back to old ideas that have gotten popular in the past.
Totally.
But now with like the new economics of like it's cheaper than ever to build distribution, you can build stuff on social, you can work with creators, there's new channels. Like something that might have worked for mobile might also work in a widget form, widget first.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. Looking for like, you know, existing ideas that could work in a new channel. I feel like that's a great way to just find good ideas, because you don't have to come up with fully original, fully fleshed out thoughts. It's more of just like finding a little opportunity of, hey, something's not optimized on this platform. It's not built for this channel. Let me just go and do that. And it worked for us very well.
So I got to ask you, you know, if you're trying to, you know, create an app, let's say what's Hunter's playbook to build a $1 million a month app business? You know, how do you think about that? I just want to like brainstorm with you live.
Yeah.
Around like, thinking about what makes, because you could be working on a million different ideas, right?
Yeah.
How do you think about what to work on, and then how to structure your apps so that you know that it's going to do at least $1 million a month?
I mean, the main thing that I focus on is building like a really simple experience. So, you know, I start with like figuring out what the features are going to be for like a V1, like what's like my bare bones MVP version of this concept that is good enough to solve the problem I'm trying to solve, but it's probably not optimized. It's probably rough around the edges, but it's enough to kind of solve that issue. I then like to get users on pretty quickly, right? So just, it could be a couple hundred, it could be a couple thousand. So, you know, once you have kind of built this core concept, you have like some kind of MVP for it, just testing content. Right. You know, and this could be even when the app is in pre-order stage, right? It doesn't even have to be live for you to do this. You can test content on TikTok or on Instagram Reels and, you know, see are people responding to these formats that, you know, your app is, you know, kind of the premise of the app is around these formats. Are the formats working or not? Once you drop some people into the app, then really what you're looking for is you need to get a high percentage of people to complete a core action. So you select a core action. And then you kind of orient your decisions around a core action or like a North Star metric. This is like something that I'm really bullish on, like always having that one metric that matters more than the other ones. It makes it really easy when you're doing like conversations of trade-offs, right? Because it's like, do we sacrifice this? Do we sacrifice that? If you have a North Star metric, it's kind of obvious what the decision would be because you want to just increase that. For example, I can give a couple of examples. So for Wink, which was an app that I built, it was one of the largest make new friends apps in the world. You know, North Star metric we had was like, what percentage of users get a match in their first day, right? How do we make sure that, you know, it was a swiping make new friends / dating app. How do we make sure that everybody gets a match? You know, what does that mean? How do we use the outmatching algorithm in order to sort people who swipe a lot, you know, to the right with new users, for example, right? How do we just maximize that percentage? With NGL, our North Star metric was the percentage of users that are sharing the link and sharing a few replies. We figured that, you know, sharing the link was already pretty hard because it was a 4-step process. You had to, you know, go through a tutorial. If we could get as many users as possible to share the link and then share a couple replies, that then made it where people became more comfortable to actually like send messages, right? Because you see your friend posted a link, then you see that your friend got replies. So now you as the viewer are more willing to send a message because you know that it's cool. So we kind of figured that this was like the core metric. And then with Bags, right, with my latest app, the core metric is how many people are coming in that are funding their accounts and making one trade in the first day, right? How do we maximize that number? And so if anything that you're doing is going against the North Star metric, then it's just not the right decision. I feel like it's super important that you have to pick one of those and kind of like go all in on, you know, orienting the business around it.
I think you're missing one key piece of this framework that I've noticed you do, which is you call it build a simple experience, but it's build a brand people love. So I've noticed that all the apps that you create, Wink, NGL, Bags, they all have like pretty simple names with brands that people can resonate with. Bags, it's bags.fm, right? So like when I just look at Bags, like first of all, surprisingly, no one had built a crypto app called Bags.
Shocking, right?
Shocking.
Yeah.
Like, couldn't be more shocking, right? And and it's so smart to take the like the slang of a community and make it and basically coin it as the name of your app.
Yeah, 100%. That was the thought process behind it. And we did something similar with NGL. You know, NGL is not going to lie. So it was like really easy for young people to understand like what the NGL link is, you know, and then being, oh, it's an anonymous app, you know, makes a lot of sense. But that's actually a good idea. Like, yeah, build a brand people resonate with. And I think a brand that people understand, like people are able to look at your app and have like some idea of like what it is or kind of get something from it. Right. And I think with my apps, I try to be pretty like on the nose with like what it is, just be very obvious with it. And that's something I just learned over time. Just I've done it so many times. I've seen good names and bad names. I've seen if I go too complicated, people get confused. So now I stick to short names.
Is that something that is just intuition or like how do people actually come up with a brand that people can understand and resonate with? Is it as simple as keep it short, find a slang term?
Keep it short and finding a slang term, I think, are two great ways to do it. I don't know if there's a fully fleshed out framework. A lot of it is like how you feel the vibes of the brand are. And I think by using like, you know, words from a specific community, it can kind of set the vibe and the tone to be more like young and like comfortable and like colloquial and like we're just friends talking and hanging. And that's why the app is called what it is. And sometimes I, in the past, would like move some of that language into the app, like into like, you know, different pop-ups and different, you know, into the copy to kind of also skew young, stay relevant, make them feel comfortable, right? Like make them feel like they're almost, you know, it's like the app is like that understands them because it understands their language.
Yeah, we have a saying for we actually made it our slogan for our design agency, stay a while. It's like how do you make people feel like when they're in an app experience that they want to stay a while, like they don't want to leave?
That's actually very true. You definitely want them to stay a while, so making them feel comfortable is a big part of that.
And then from a design perspective, so you know, do you hire like one designer? Like how do you deal with that?
So I design everything okay. for all my apps. I've solo designed every single app I've built. So like a dozen apps at this point, including the branding, including everything.
And what do you use, like Figma or?
Yeah, I use Figma.
Cool.
I started out my first app I was designing it on PowerPoint, and then I learned Photoshop, and then I learned Sketch, and then Figma. So I've kind of used a lot of different tools.
Awesome. Okay. So step one, build a brand. Step two, build simple experience. What does this look like bare bones? Step three, get users on at least 100. So testing the content, figuring out what the format is, picking a platform. You select the core action as number four, high percentage of people doing it. You know, I'm guessing this, Matt, you know, this is different depending on what your core action is, but yep. Can you give a range of what a high percentage is?
Yeah. So when I say like a high percentage of people sharing the link in multiple replies, I mean over 90%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Vast majority. You need to aim where everyone's doing the same thing. And then also it's like, you want to have one flow, right? Because if you have branching user journeys, then it gets also complicated, right? You want like everyone to go through the exact same flow. And then you can see, you know, was I successful in getting them to do this or was I not? Because it's very apparent because everyone has to do the same thing.
So once you've done that, say you've got close to 90% or 90% or more, what's next?
At that point, then you want to continue seeding it, right? Because now you've proven that you can get enough people to complete the action in the app. So now you need to seed it with like a really, like you kind of did the test content, you got users on, you iterated. Now you need to kind of take all those learnings and then apply more pressure and then just start trying to seed it in different audiences, different niches, you know, work with creators in different countries, in different time zones that have different kinds of audiences. You know, just really like push. I feel like once you know that you can get people to do the core action, your job is now just to get more people onto the app. And what I like to do is like part of the core action, I do like to have some kind of sharing or inviting in that core action, right? You know, we've seen apps like, you know, that have hard invite gates. We saw that with Laps, for example, very viral photo app. You would invite, I think, 3 to 5 friends to get in the app. So a lot of people would, you know, hit that wall and maybe not go over. But if you got over the wall, you were an extremely valuable user because you brought in all these people with you. So it's like if you have some kind of loop in the app or some kind of way of inviting people, whatever it is, I would put that in the core experience, because then if you just drop in 1,000 people and 50% of them share, that's 500 people that have now shared your app or they've invited their friend. So it's like your K factor is going to increase. Because you have that in there and you're not fully reliant on the TikTok or the Instagram reel or the ad that they came from, because you kind of have this extra little growth lever that some people or most people are going through. In the case of NGL, it was almost everybody.
Yeah. So I've noticed you've done that with pretty much all of your apps. So with NGL, it was you were posting the link, the NGL link on your Snap or Instagram. With Bags, I first learned about Bags. I didn't even know it was you, to be honest. I first learned about Bags because I saw people sharing their Bags link on Twitter. Yeah. Can you talk about the social aspect of Bags?
Yeah. So, you know, when we started Bags, we didn't really know what it was going to be. We kind of had this idea for like what we wanted to build. We knew that we wanted to build a really good consumer crypto app that could get anybody into crypto, but also have them understand what's going on. And at the same time, still have people who are crypto natives be able to enjoy the app, right? So it's a pretty hard problem. So we started with just like, how do we create like a really cool brand? How do we create like a great community of people? We had the idea to kind of start building growth loops. This was really early days of the company. We didn't have any followers on social media. We hadn't made any money. We hadn't really built, you know, anything substantial at the time. So we started with just a couple of loops. One of the loops we had was, you know, you would log in with Twitter, you'd claim your Bags link, and then you share it. And then if people join from your link, we would mark those people as like one of your invites. And then we had like a leaderboard of all the people that were inviting. And we had like lots of the top people on Solana, you know, like, you know, Raj and Toli from Solana were on there. A lot of other people that are big in crypto were on there. And then we basically just kind of kept building growth loops. And that kept growing the followers, and it kept just growing the hype and the buzz about the app. And it allowed us to kind of get to that, you know, that 100,000 follower mark on Twitter. And then we really just focused all the efforts on backing that up, backing that growth loop up and that hype up with building a really good product.
And when you're talking, okay, once you've got a thing that's working and you're continually seeding it, are you paying to seed it? Like, where, you know, is this organic or is this paid basically?
Sometimes it's organic, sometimes it's paid. I think that, you know, in the case of NGL, we were paying, you know, $50, $100 here or there to influencers to just post the link on their story. You know, in the case of an app, like a different kind of app, right? Like with Wink, a lot of what we were doing was we were paying TikTokers, we were paying people to make videos. But like, I think that you don't want to pay a lot, right? Like you kind of want to just test and build things that can scale, that like work on a small scale. And that way, all you really need is like that one viral video to kind of get the traction going. But it can be paid, it can be free. It just depends on, honestly, your relationship with an influencer, your relationship with creative agency, whatever it may be. There's not really like a go-to answer there.
And what else are we missing from this list, if anything?
I mean, just not, I would call like additional pointers, more of just like general, like, you know, good practices, is like authenticity in the way that you present the app, like just present it how it is, right? And like be very real with how you, you know, communicate publicly. Like with, in the case of NGL and Bags, like, you know, NGL has 2 million followers on Instagram, you know, Bags has over 100,000 on Twitter. You know, very active posting on the Bags account every day. You know, we have an intern that's constantly, you know, making sure that people are, you know, seeing Bags, hearing an authentic voice, you know, being memeable, being funny, being relatable, you know, not being just like a brand that just kind of like sits there. In the case of NGL, you know, we don't push it as much now on Instagram as we used to, but, you know, the Instagram has like meme formats and like, you know, the funniest, you know, messages from people. And like, you know, just a bunch of like, you know, fun, young skewing things that make it feel more comfortable to young people. So like an authentic voice, an authentic stance, it's probably part of the brand aspect, but I feel like that's really critical.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it makes everything work better. Like it makes people love the product more. It makes them want to share it more. Just increases affinity and trust with the brand. So I agree. And it's an unfair advantage for people.
Yeah, definitely agree.
Anything else?
I mean, that's pretty much the core of it, I'd say. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And just curious, like, are there 1, 2, 3 apps that you can think of that you look up to, that you're like, they've done these things that people should look at as like a inspiration for you know, mobile app ideas?
I think that, you know, if you want to look for consumer social inspo, I'd hope that people look to some of my apps, specifically NGL. I think on the AI side, I do think that Zach and Blake and the guys at Cal AI crushed that, really did an amazing job on the AI app side. And then I'd say like, I mean, there's lots of apps that I respect. You brought up Locket. That's a great example of an app that crushed on social. We didn't talk about them, but also Pengu. I know those guys well. And I think that what they're doing with, you know, character animation and AI and kind of creating this like human experience between an AI is very interesting and like definitely worth exploring. I feel like we're going to see a lot more of those things for different like contextual based use cases, you know, not just like an AI friend, but like different, you know, kind of personalities to help you on the way. So Pengu is a great one to look at. I mean, those are the ones that like just jump out to me just from my pure memory, but very, very impressive apps.
So Pengu, for people who don't know, It's essentially like a virtual pet, right?
Yeah.
So this is a great example of, it's not like they invented virtual pets. You know, when I was a kid, I remember getting a Tamagotchi, like OG from the 90s, mm-hmm. you know? And even then that was a new form factor of the time. It was like the first time you'd be able to have like essentially a portable computer. And then, you know, a lot of kids had them. Now, this is virtual pets on mobile has existed for a while, but they haven't existed with the degree of AI that's been injected into them. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So one way to think about startup ideas for in general, like, you know, I love your playbook, but I think also thinking about it like NGL for X, Cal AI for X, Lockit for X, Pengu for X, thinking about what, you know, what other niches, like how can you take that format and just apply it to other niches?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think that like, you know, Pengu is a great example of that for sure. I mean, we talked earlier about like Halo, right? And like, you know, you know, these like spirituality apps, you know, it could be interesting, like a hybrid of a Pengu type app with a spirituality type app, right? Like that's an interesting niche that I don't think people have explored fully. Or, you know, rather than, you know, a calorie tracking app, be using, you know, GPT Vision for something else that maybe is a novel experience, right? I do think that like it's more about looking for frameworks than it is for looking for like ideas. The framework I feel like is more important because now it's really easy to just like framework X, you know, with, you know, audience Y, you know.
You mentioned GPT Vision. We talked about widgets. What technology are you interested in right now?
Well, I'm very interested in crypto and crypto going mainstream and getting real regulation, being accepted now by the government. That's really exciting. And a lot of people now kind of building consumer apps in crypto. I feel like that's like very exciting for me. As far as like future tech, like this or on the horizon, I'm really excited for augmented reality glasses whenever those happen. I think that's going to be a pretty incredible experience when we can prompt an app using our own, you know, Jarvis AI type and we can create a fully immersive experience that anyone can look through and see. And I think that's really going to be the next step of how we kind of take AI off of just the phone and really it becomes more immersive and it becomes more shareable. And I think it'll kind of mirror the trend of, you know, where everything's going with AI coding tools like Cursor and AI video tools. I think it's all going to kind of like have this interesting singularity where we're going to be able to just create anything and anyone can see it in full immersive detail and then we can share it. And I feel like that's going to require the next step in hardware. So I'm bullish on that. I don't know when Apple's going to finally unveil what they have there, but I'm sure it's sitting somewhere in the basement and they have the glasses ready to go. But I can't wait for that. That's what I'm super excited for. Like, you know, the next hardware platform. I feel like we're not quite there yet, but we'll start to see it soon, I think.
What about running local models on phones? Do you think that AI models will be run in the cloud like they are today? You know, you use ChatGPT and it's all hosted by them, or do you think people are gonna have it local on their phones and on desktop?
I think that the phones eventually, yes, absolutely. I think that I do think that like the phone will be the driving compute for whatever the glasses are. I don't think that the compute's going to be happening on the glasses. So I think that in the way that we're using the cloud to do all the AI training and generation, I think it'll be like the phones will have to get more advanced. They'll have to be able to handle more of these, you know, LLMs. I could see it happening for sure. I could definitely see it happening. But I also, we don't know, you know, maybe it requires even more compute to do the even crazier things. So it might stay in the cloud, but I could totally see a future where like all the compute and all the LLM stuff is happening on the phone. And then you have like super lightweight glasses that are just connected over Bluetooth and the processing is being sent to the iPhone.
If you're, so these are three trends in tech that, you know, you think are interested in, that you're interested in. if you're just starting out, you know, you want to make your first $1 million, $10 million, maybe even more, and you're trying to create a startup to go and do that, what sort of trends in tech should people be, focused on, I guess?
I do think that for young people who I can talk to more specifically about this, like people that are in their teenage years, 20s, you know, in college or post-college, I do think that, when you're young, you want to take a lot of swings and a lot of risks and a lot of, like, you want to have a lot of at-bats, a lot of tries. So I do think that building consumer mobile apps is like the best thing to be doing if you're a young person. Obviously, I'm biased. That's like all I've ever done my whole life. But I do think that, like, when it comes to understanding human psychology, figuring out how to build a product that people love, figuring out how to go viral and kind of create these, you know, global experiences, like, you could really like touch the whole world using, you know, consumer social and consumer apps in general, right? It's like the way that people and the way that humans interact with the world is through apps and through our phones. So I feel like if you're a young person and you're looking at tech and like, where do I go? I would really go on the consumer side versus going on like the B2B side, the SaaS side, just because I feel like, those things aren't as, call it, traditionally fun than compared to a consumer app, right? Consumer app is a little bit more fun. You know, you're dealing with building things for lots of people. You're not dealing so much with like, you know, the B2B world of dealing with businesses and contracts. It's more of like build a great product, figure out how to market it, build something people love. So I would say like, yeah, young people, just anyone that's looking to get into tech, I would just get into the consumer side also because the tools are getting much better. So within a short amount of time here, you will not need any technical person with you. I think still we need someone. We're not fully there yet, but I do think, yeah, consumer is the way to go for sure.
Cool. I love it. Hunter Isaacson, giving away playbooks, giving away sauce. I knew you'd bring it. We did zero preparation for this podcast.
None.
And I said to him right before this, I said, this is what I would ask you in person, like if we were just catching up for coffee. So I wanted that to be this experience. And so I appreciate you, man. And Hunter, if people want to get to know you better, how can they do it?
Follow me on X and Instagram, Hunter J. Isaacson. And yeah, I post there regularly. I give insights. I help young people in the industry and mentorship. And I'm always, you know, a resource for people that are getting into consumer social. So yeah, follow me, hit me up, send me your app. I'd love to see it.
I'll include those links in the show notes to make it easy on people. And then, like always, I read every single darn YouTube comment. So please say hello, say what's up. Let us know if you enjoyed this episode and what we should be covering next. Startup Ideas Podcast, Hunter Isaacson. It's been real. I'll see you around Miami, my friend.
Yes.
And hopefully people enjoy this episode so you can come back.
I would love that. And yes, I'll see you in Miami soon, brother.
All right. I'll catch you later.
All right, man. Peace.